For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today is Saturday, October 10th, and today we're talking about possible COVID-19 vaccines, from how they're being evaluated for safety and effectiveness in record time, to which groups of people are not included in the trials right now, and much more. My guest today really breaks it all down for us and also explains what she'll be looking for when deciding whether to get herself and her family vaccinated. Dr. Angela Rasmussen is a virologist at Columbia University who has studied a huge range of viral pathogens, including this new coronavirus that causes COVID-19. So here's our conversation. Welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, when we provide all the day's news in just 10 minutes. It's fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. It's time for today's Special Edition Saturday. You ready? Let's do this. Thank you so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
My pleasure, Erica. Thanks for having me.
So before we talk all about what's happening now with the four final stage trials in the U.S., I'd love for you to just outline what it typically takes to get a vaccine developed and approved. What is that process? What is that timing? And then how does that compare to the process and speed that we're seeing now with developing a COVID-19 vaccine?
Sure. That's a great question, and one that I think is often lost on people, because normally the vaccine development process is something that takes as little as a decade, and can take even longer than that in some cases. So normally how it works is you find something that you want to make a vaccine for, and then you start developing different vaccine strategies. Once you've decided which vaccine strategy you're going to use, you develop that vaccine, and then you test it first in experimental models. So you test it in laboratory animals. Oftentimes you test it, if possible, in more than one species of animal so that you can be sure that that vaccine works and that it's relatively safe to use before you even go into human trials. Then you would typically have a phase one human trial, which is just to look at safety of the vaccine. You're just making sure that it is safe to give to people. So that's usually in a fairly small number of people, usually no more than 100 people that participate in a phase one trial. Then you'd move to a phase two trial, which is basically like a phase one trial, except it's much larger. You would do the phase two trial in, say, 500 to a couple thousand participants. That's when you get to the phase three clinical trial, and that's where you start to look at efficacy as well as durability, which is how long any immune protection a vaccine gives you lasts. So a phase three clinical trial is usually designed with tens of thousands of patients. It will be a double-blinded, randomized controlled trial, which means that out of those 30,000, 50,000, however many patients or participants, some of them will randomly be getting a control vaccine. That's usually either a placebo, a saline shot, or it's some other vaccine that's already been approved for a completely different indication. And then you will give some of those people, again, in a random fashion, the vaccine that's being tested. And then you will follow those people over a long period of time. And you'll look at not only the types of immune responses they develop in response to vaccination, but you'll also see how many people in the control group versus how many people in the experimental group actually become infected with the virus that you're trying to vaccinate against. And a phase three trial can go on for years for a couple of reasons. One, it requires people to actually be exposed to the virus that the vaccine is trying to protect against in the course of their normal lives. And sometimes that doesn't always happen right away after they're given the experimental vaccine. So you have to wait a little while. You also want to follow them for a longer period of time so that you can see how long any protection that that vaccine gives them lasts. So that's what we call durability. And usually that means that phase three clinical trials can last years. Sometimes they can last up to 10 years. And only after all of that data is back can you then apply for full FDA licensure. So the COVID vaccine pipeline has been considerably accelerated in a couple of different ways. So first of all, the preclinical work in this case in the animals was done at the same time as phase one trials. And that was done because all of the vaccines that are currently in phase three clinical trials for COVID have already been tested in other phase one clinical trials. So there is some data to suggest that the platform at least is safe. As soon as they finished those, right around the same time, they finished the animal studies that did show that the vaccines were protective in those animal models. So then they moved forward at the end of July with beginning the phase three clinical trials, and those are going to be greatly accelerated. They're still enrolling tens of thousands of people, around 30,000 to 50,000 people in each trial, but they're not going to be following these people for as long, because the phase three clinical trial will be at least enough to show short-term efficacy with this number of people. They've also tried to speed up the process of the phase three trials by targeting trial participants in areas that are hotspots with high community transmission of SARS coronavirus 2. That way, they hopefully won't have to wait as long for the people who are participating in the trial to be potentially exposed. And then finally, the last thing that they've done that is really a marked difference is that Operation Warp Speed has funded manufacturing of these vaccines while the phase three trials are occurring. Normally, vaccine manufacturers would not begin scaling up and producing millions of doses of vaccines until after they have FDA approval, because obviously it would be a tremendous financial hardship for their company if that vaccine was not approved. In this case, the government has incentivized them to do that. So that way, if the vaccine gets an emergency use authorization from the FDA, there will be clinical grade doses of that vaccine ready to go and be distributed to the public. So that's another way that the pipeline has been accelerated.
Do you think the record speed that we are seeing is necessary considering what's happening with this pandemic?
I do. I think that we've already seen within the public discourse, you know, people are eager to get back to their own, to their normal everyday lives pre-pandemic. There's a real strong economic need to get back to normal. And so I think that it is really crucial to do that by getting herd immunity. The only way we know how to do that safely is through vaccines. And we've known now for hundreds of years, really, that vaccines are an excellent way to safely protect populations of people against infectious diseases. It's also important to note, though, that we should not be doing that to the point where we are sacrificing the quality of the data. And that's why I believe personally that these phase three clinical trials should proceed to completely enroll all the participants and collect data on them for some time after. I think it's going to be very unlikely that we'll be able to make a decision about safety and efficacy so far by say, the election or even within the next couple months, just because it does take time to acquire this data. And we want to make sure that that data is robust and we can trust it.
Still ahead, what she'll be looking for when deciding whether to get her own family vaccinated, what groups of people are not represented in these trials, and the expected timeline. But first, this episode is brought to you by CastleGrade. I've loved hearing from many of you that you're getting these reusable, sustainable, and high-quality masks for better protection as you go to work, while you travel, send kids to school, and more. CastleGrade masks are registered with the FDA as an N95, so you know you're getting that high level of protection for whatever your need. And now CastleGrade has a new filter available for smoke-affected areas of Washington, California, Oregon, and Nevada. It's been independently tested, and the company says the charcoal filters serve a dual purpose for stopping both virus and smoke particles. So you're getting a mask that is safe for both those uses, plus it's a reusable, eco-friendly option. Instead of contributing to the billions of disposable masks and N95s being thrown out at the end of each day, you can just put your CastleGrade mask in the dishwasher for easy cleaning and reuse. So check out all the options and learn more at CastleGrade.com and enter the discount code NEWS10 at checkout for 10% off your first order. That's CastleGrade.com with a new discount code NEWS10, NEWS10, at checkout for 10% off your first order. Now back to my conversation with Angela Rasmussen about COVID-19 vaccines. We now know the AstraZeneca vaccine trial has been put on hold because a volunteer participant became ill. What do we know right now about what's going on with that? And what does this tell you?
So in this case, a participant in the UK developed a neurological condition called transverse myelitis, which is fairly rare. We don't really know all the details about this particular patient, but when a trial is paused like that, the Data Safety Monitoring Board investigates the case to determine if that adverse event was likely caused by the vaccine. I think that it shows that the system is working the way that it's supposed to. The Data Safety Monitoring Board, first and foremost, is to make sure that the trial is safe for the participants.
And at least for now, three other final stage trials in the U.S. are still ongoing. And some of them, people have to get two shots. What are the implications of that, ultimately, if they get approved and they're distributed?
So if you need two shots, that means automatically that we will have half the amount of vaccine that we are manufacturing. So if you make 100 million doses, but people need two shots, that means in reality, you actually only have 50 million full doses or full dosing regimens available for people. So that will have implications for both manufacturing and distribution. It will also make the trials potentially take longer because you can't really assess efficacy until enough participants have had both shots, which they have to receive 3 to 4 weeks apart.
You mentioned vaccine efficacy, and I think people are going to hear that term more and more as we talk about vaccines. Can you explain what it really means?
Yeah, that means if the vaccine works. That means if it's effective. When we talk about vaccine efficacy, we're talking about really two things. One is to prevent infection completely. That's something that's often called sterilizing immunity, meaning the vaccine keeps you from becoming infected at all. The other is by reducing symptom severity. So it shows that these vaccines, at least in the monkey models, are effective or show efficacy in terms of being able to reduce disease severity. And a lot of people think, well, doesn't that mean the vaccine doesn't actually work at all? Like, because some of the animals are still getting infected. If you could still get infected, you know, what's the point? But the thing is, not only would that save lives, certainly somebody who would otherwise have been on a ventilator, if they're protected against having that severe disease, that's going to be a huge public health benefit that's going to help our healthcare system and also, again, will save people's lives.
Are all groups being represented in these trials? For example, people with certain conditions like asthma, pregnant women, and even children?
So that's an excellent question. And the answer is no. Children and pregnant women are not enrolled in any of these trials, as far as I'm aware. And that is an oversight. Some of the other people who are in high-risk groups, so older people, people who are HIV positive, people who have asthma, people who have diabetes are all enrolled in these trials. And they are making an effort to enroll people from a diverse group of backgrounds and medical histories. But you're absolutely right that it is important to include other groups that are also at high risk, including pregnant women. And even though children are not at high risk of developing severe disease, they can certainly be infected. And in some cases, granted rare cases, but they occur, children can become very ill with this too. So future trials, should any of these vaccines get an emergency use authorization approval, will need to look at how these vaccines work in those other vulnerable populations.
Some experts have warned that this vaccine will not be like a light switch, that it will not just make the pandemic go away overnight. Do you agree with that assessment? And what else do you think it's important for people to keep in mind, even after there's potentially a proven vaccine available?
You know, there's a couple reasons why this is not going to be, you know, like the sun comes out from behind the clouds and the pandemic suddenly magically ends. One of those is a very practical reason. We just won't have enough doses of this vaccine to give to everybody. It's not like there's going to be an emergency use authorization issued, and then the next day you're going to be able to go to your neighborhood Walgreens or CVS and get a COVID shot. The vaccine will have to be distributed in terms of priority. And the first priority will be frontline healthcare workers, the people who are at the greatest risk of exposure. But some of it, I think, is going to be a different kind of challenge. It's not just those practical aspects about distributing the vaccine once they're approved. It's going to be convincing people that they should actually get vaccinated.
And what's your advice to the average person as they are eventually going to need to assess whether or not they should get themselves and their families vaccinated?
Ideally, an emergency use authorization won't be issued until there is clinical trial data to support it. And hopefully myself and my colleagues will do an effective job at communicating what that data actually says to the public so that they can make an informed choice about it. It's really up to us, I think, to win hearts and minds. And the way we do that is by being very clear and very transparent about the data and what it shows in terms of both safety and efficacy. If the data shows from a phase 3 trial that the vaccine is, any vaccine, is safe and effective, then I will take one as soon as I can. I will get my family to take one. I'll try to lead by example, and I'll try to communicate that to people.
And finally, any predictions about timing when we might actually see a vaccine get that emergency use authorization?
I think probably the earliest we will see that is by the end of this year or early next year.
And you can learn more about this topic and our guest in today's episode notes on thenewsworthy.com. And as always, we'll keep you updated on the vaccine trials and availability during our regular episodes, Monday through Friday, when we provide the day's news in about 10 minutes. Thanks again for joining us today. I'll be back on Monday with your next news roundup. Until then, have a great weekend.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day. And for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry, with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help, so you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.